Chapter 3. Meetings. Kurama spent most of Wednesday in the crawl space of the attic, digging through his father's magic trunk. The trunk had more enchantments on it than the lock Shiori had known about, as Kurama realized after pulling out several incomplete and damaged wands. Some looked like they might have exploded sometime within the 15 years the trunk had been sealed by his father, but the other contents of the trunk were untouched by this accident. Odd, Kurama thought, peering at the one that looked to have blown up inside the trunk. A singed hair poked from the damaged end, baby fine and faintly red? He teased the hair loose from the wand cavity until it fell free onto his palm, a nearly invisible line scarcely 3 centimeters long. A baby hair. Kurama grabbed another of the damaged wands, rubbing at the charred end until the core poked free, and drawing it out, discovering a second baby hair. "You little bastard," he whispered, staring at the 2 hairs. 2 red hairs from a magical beast in the form of a human infant. The man had used his own possessed son's hair, probably from a hairbrush, in wand-making experiments. It was a move that Kurama would never get to deliver payback on. He tossed the unfinished wands aside, dropping them in the folds of a shopkeeper's robe he'd found earlier, and continued to rummage through his father's wizarding possessions. A cardboard box of postcards and moving photographs, few from Japan, a Chinese treasure ship in a bottle, a pair of papier-mâché dolls, boxed with 3 origami ones, all of which started to dance clumsily when Kurama opened their box. A delicate wooden flute, the holes a bit mishappened to Kurama's inexpert eye. A Christmas gift. A Muggle lady's watch. Aha! Tucked along the side of the trunk was a roll of thick, navy blue fabric. Kurama pulled it free, shaking it open to reveal an unmended shop apron. A store's name and address were emblazoned in stark white kanji, indicating a district just 2 train stops away. "Let's see where you worked when you weren't experimenting, old man." By Wednesday, the rain had dried up, with Dudley firmly ensconced in front of the downstairs telly, addicted to his latest shoot-'em-up video game. Harry took the opportunity to slip out of the house. The small park was empty, too muddy from the storm for the local housewives to bring their children to play, though the pavement and play equipment was dry and getting hot from the sun. Harry sat on a swing with a good view of the roads, just in case any of Dudley's friends got him out of the house, and stared blindly at the dull scene. Just 2 more summers. He could actually count down the weeks if he bothered. 7.5 if he got to spend August at the Burrow again. That wasn't so bad. Hogwarts started up again in that much time. And, going in the other direction, they'd begun Owl Review in defense. They'd been weeks out of Genkai's test. 2 weeks wasn't really much time for Harry to notice anything unusual in the Prophet, but that was an unreliable source, and he'd only had a few days to hear the Muggle news. But Voldemort seemed to be... what was the word Harry wanted? Invisible? Inactive? Surely he hadn't gone away. He'd been equally inactive throughout last year, and look what that had meant. Draco and Dean... but that plan had failed, and Malfoy had vanished, so... It took a few moments for Harry to register the short, dark-haired figure walking up the road from the general direction of the supermarket, carrying a bag full of groceries, a newspaper tucked under one arm. The boy wasn't any of Dudley's gang, but there was still something oddly familiar about him. Then the boy turned the corner near the park, his face appearing from behind the groceries and... Yusuke? Harry nearly fell off his swing. The Japanese boy raised a hand. Yo. What are you... What is he doing here? Didn't he go back to Japan? With whoever was on the train? Everybody but Genkai and the twins? Yusuke walked into the park, gaze flicking around. Nice to meet you too, Potter. What is he looking for? Harry instinctively followed his gaze. Nothing. The neighborhood was empty. Relax, Yusuke said, grabbing another swing and taking a seat. You aren't going the way of Malfoy. The way of he knows? Harry thought. Kurama did do it then. I got hired out to Old Fig for the summer. Something about arthritis, a broken leg, and a friend's brat being cheaper in room and board than hiring 10 different delivery and house care services. Harry blinked, his train of thought blessedly derailed. You got hired? Yep. To Mrs. Fig? Yep. As a live-in errand boy? Yusuke grinned. That's the story. Load of bull, isn't it? No kidding. So what's the real story? Harry asked. Genkai made a deal with some order. Fig and I try to spy on each other. Everybody gets to keep an eye on you, and you get to interrogate me about Kurama if you want. Harry gaped. He did not just say. Yes, he did. Spying on Fig? And me? And you're my babysitter? Yusuke snorted. I ain't nobody's babysitter. Pay attention to the last part. Kurama. Harry didn't want to think about this. What about him? He asked warily. A shrug. I knew what he was from the start. He rubbed a hand over his nose. So you got questions or anything? No, Harry said automatically. Suit yourself, Yusuke said. But if you change your mind, I'm at Fig's. Harry grunted in acknowledgement, and Yusuke stood, shifting his groceries. I've got stuff that's going to melt. I'll see you around, Potter. Harry stared after him as he left the park. In the end, Kurama had to cast a locator charm to find the shop, and when he did, the charm led him to a tiny, traditionally styled wooden shack tucked far in the back of an alley behind a fire escape. Thick layers of magic pushed warningly at him as he approached, tingling unpleasantly. No doubt anti-demon wards, reacting to Kurama's demon soul. But his human blood kept the effects tolerable, and he reached the door without injury. The shop was far larger and cleaner inside than it had seemed from the alley, though this wasn't immediately apparent. Everything from tiny lacquered boxes to massive tansu wardrobes sat in piles upon the bare floor, with scarcely enough room between to walk. Wooden carvings lay on shelves and rafters, ranging from cake molds to kitchen deities to lamps, these last lit, though they did little to cut the shadows among the goods. The thick scent of fresh sawdust hung in the air. Kurama edged carefully between the stacks of merchandise. Surely there was a shopkeeper in here? A register? He looked up to the corners of the store searchingly. Ah, a large mirror hung at an angle near the ceiling, showing most of the shop floor. Kurama's gaze flickered over his own reflection, then to the edge of the mirror. A short, balding man in a traditional blue shop coat and bandana stood behind the counter in the far corner of the store, holding a baton and watching Kurama with ill-concealed, wary amusement. I'm a customer, Kurama said, raising his hands in surrender, gaze firmly on the shopkeeper. Welcome to the shop, then, the man said. The baton didn't move. Kurama strongly suspected that it was his version of a wand. What do you need today? Kurama twitched a hand towards the counter, tilting his head in question. If I may. The man snorted. Kurama interpreted it to mean that he was being silly, so he dropped his hands and maneuvered through the stacks to the counter. I require a new trunk, Kurama began, smiling politely at the shopkeeper. He nodded. Yes? Yes, a medicine chest. How to explain the next part? Dimensionally overlapping a travel trunk, so that both occupy the same space, and I can store items in each, Kurama clarified. Dimensional overlap, the shopkeeper echoed. That isn't cheap. I can pay. If necessary, he could send the bill to Koenma and let the brat choke on his pacifier. The shopkeeper eyed him carefully, taking in the quality of Kurama's clothing. He'd been careful to wear one of his nicer outfits, and his calm assurance, and weighing that against his youth and magical aura. Then, with a soft harumph, he reached under the counter and brought out a tray of fist-sized boxes. "Let me show you the available options for the dimensional overlap," he said, considerably more polite as he tapped the side of the tray with his baton. A roll of heavy rice paper and a brush appeared on the counter, the brush hovering and, from what Kurama could figure, prepared to take notes about his order. As the shopkeeper demonstrated the different ways he could make a trunk and a medicine chest overlap, Kurama made appreciative sounds and nodded in the right places. Eventually, he selected an inexpensive model, which he considered the most elegant. A trunk's flip-up style lid, coupled with a medicine chest's small, square side drawers, both sharing the same space. The drawers non-existent to the trunk's storage compartment, and vice versa. Kurama continued to add details, the shopkeeper nodding and making suggestions, filling in details of wood and stain. Was he going to store magical, volatile, and or delicate materials inside? Drawers, 10x10 and 10 compartments each. Type of lock, a key, since the available spells would either react badly to the translation charms or lock out the other Tante. Completion date, and finally, name? Minamino Shuichi, Kurama replied. The shopkeeper paused, glancing up to meet Kurama's eyes. Ichiro-san's little boy? He asked. Kurama raised an eyebrow. If he worked here 15 years ago, yes. The shopkeeper nodded. Did he ever get that wand experiment of his to work? You don't know? Kurama asked. Was I working with an untested procedure? He did. The man gave a low whistle. I never thought. It must have been just before he died then. Must have, Kurama agreed, deliberately calm. I could have been blasted sky high. He pulled out his wallet. What's the total? 60,000 yen, half up front. Kurama fished out the bills, shuffling quickly through them to the right amount and setting them on the counter. Pleasure doing business with you. Likewise. The passage to Ireland had been rough, the cargo ship splashing chilly sea spray into Hiei's face, soaking him through, a stiff wind trying to blow him off the rooftop where he'd stowed away. Upon docking, he darted down the mooring ropes and away, with none of the muggles the wiser. It had, perhaps, not been the wisest decision to sneak across the Irish Sea, but there was no ferry and Hiei didn't feel like overpaying some curious fisherman. He took his sword out from under his heavy coat, unlacing the canvas he'd wrapped around it for protection, and checked it over carefully, looking for damp patches that would rust, and salt that would corrode the weapon. He found none. The canvas had done its job. Yuki poked her tiny, bedraggled head out of Hiei's coat, sneezing pitifully, before turning a betrayed, deeply offended glare on Hiei. Hiei shook out the canvas, dampened patches, and ran his hands over it, warming it through. Then he scooped the half-grown cat out of his pocket and dumped her on the cloth, rubbing it like a towel over her. The cat put up with this treatment in baleful silence, glare deepening. "You aren't the only one who's wet," Hiei told her. Yuki continued to stare at him with all the offended dignity a cat could muster. Flicking his scarf off, Hiei dried it with a burst of steam, bundled the cat up, and sped off toward Belfast and the wizarding enclaves there, leaving the canvas behind. On Thursday, at the completely disreputable hour of just after dinner, a knock sounded at the Dursleys' door. Harry, still on the stairs heading back to his room, paused as Petunia hurried irritably to the door, drying her hands on the dish towel. "Who on earth?" she muttered under her breath, heels clacking on the linoleum, not noticing Harry in the shadows of the stairwell as she pulled open the door and peeked out. "Yes?" A woman answered, voice too distinct for Harry to hear the words, but there was a definite Cockney accent sharpening it. Aunt Petunia flinched, breath catching in her teeth. "Just a minute," she answered, shutting the door too hurriedly. "Boy," she hissed up the stairs, piercing eyes focusing on Harry. "Get down here, now." Harry made his way warily down the staircase. On the lowest step, once he was within reach, Aunt Petunia's hand snapped out and clamped on his ear. She yanked him the rest of the way to the ground floor and spun him against the wall. "What on earth did you do?" she demanded, eyes flicking from him to the door. "There are freak police on the doorstep," she added, nails pricking at his earlobe. "What did you do?" "Nothing," Harry answered, mind racing. Orrs on the doorstep? Had they found out about Sirius's letters? Had Voldemort done something? "Liar," Petunia snapped, wrenching away from Harry. "Vernon," she called, stalking towards the back of the house in a huff. "Vernon!" Harry eyed the stairs longingly. Just how much more trouble would he be in if he went upstairs to his room? If the Aurors didn't want to talk to him, he'd be better off out of sight. But if they did, and Petunia had to fetch him? Wait. The article. Malfoy. Routine questioning. Vernon lumbered into the foyer, the evening paper crumpled in his fist, and spotted Harry still against the wall. He brandished his paper in Harry's face. "You can't even stay out of trouble in your freak world," he said, sneering. "I suppose you think I should be glad you haven't brought real police down on respectable people, Find this funny?" "No, Uncle Vernon." "You'll be on your way to whatever jail you freaks have by midnight," Vernon added with relish. Harry managed not to react to the mention of Azkaban, since his uncle didn't know what he was talking about. Vernon turned away and yanked the door open. "Make it quick," he ordered. "We don't want your kind in this house any longer than necessary."
"This won't take but a moment, tops," the woman who talked to Petunia replied, stepping into the house. Much to Harry's surprise, the woman was little taller than he was, and slim, with blindingly pink hair, a muggle t-shirt, and jeans. He heard Vernon mutter something about freaks and college punk cops, but ignored it. She got his look and waggled her fingers at him. "Watch your Potter." Harry blinked. "Hi?" "Auror Tonks, at your service," she introduced herself. Then, pointing a thumb over her shoulder, she added, "And this is an observer from the Ministry, Kingsley Shacklebolt." The man looming behind Tonks had been unnoticeable, drowned out by the bright, eye-catching auror. But now that Harry's attention had been directed away from the woman, how on earth did I miss that? Kingsley Shacklebolt didn't have anywhere near the same impressive build as Hagrid, but he made up for it by being imposingly human and effective-looking. Bald and black, he had on a slightly out-of-style muggle suit, also black, and wore a tiny gold hoop in one ear. Standing in Petunia's perfectly middle-class muggle home, he looked like he was ready to deliver a lawsuit. "We'd like to ask you a few questions about the disappearance of Draco Malfoy," Tonks added, "if you don't mind." He'd guessed right. "Sure," Harry said. Tonks' eyes strayed expectantly to the living room. Vernon stood firmly in the doorway, arms crossed, face blotchy. "You can just arrest him right there and get out," he snapped impatiently.
"Arrest?"
Tonks and Shacklebolt blurted. "No, you've misunderstood. We're terribly sorry. We didn't make ourselves clear," Tonks added quickly. "We just need to ask Harry some questions." Vernon's face fell.
"You're not arresting him?"
"No, just questions," Tonks told him, smiling in a way that was probably meant to be soothing.
"I see."
Vernon looked crestfallen, but quickly rallied.
"Ask your ruddy questions and get out then."
Tonks nodded agreeably. Then, with a quick glance at Vernon and Petunia staring in the doorway, glaring, took out a sheet of parchment and an ever-ink quill. "All right then, let's start. You're Harry Potter, Hogwarts student, just completed your fifth year, correct?" Harry tried not to look incredulous. Yes? She grinned at him. Not that I don't know, but just for the record and all that, what? Are you acquainted with Draco Malfoy?
Yes.
How so?
We are classmates.
On good terms? Tonks asked knowingly.
Harry snorted.
Bloody no.
When did you last see him?
Harry thought for a long moment. Had he seen that damn spot of blonde on the platform? The train? Malfoy was hard to miss, but...
For certain? Harry finally said. At breakfast on the day we took the train back to London.
Not on the train? Tonks asked.
Harry shook his head.
No.
It had been a relief then, but...
And that's really weird. Tonks raised an eyebrow as Harry continued. He picks a fight every year on the train home, but not this time.
So he was acting strangely?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Had he been acting strangely before you got on the express?
Hell yes! Finding out you've been sleeping with a demon in your room the whole year? Witnessing murder?
I wasn't really paying attention. We haven't had a fight since before Owls, if that's anything. The whole year was really out of it.
I see, Tonks murmured.
Back to when you last saw him. Who was he with?
Harry shrugged. His usual crowd? The Slytherins in our year.
And what was he doing?
Eating breakfast, just like the rest of us.
Tonks smiled ruefully.
Have to ask. It's procedure.
So, with that established, do you know of anyone who would have wanted to kidnap him?
Kidnap? No.
Except Genkai's team, since Draco knows that Kurama's a demon. But then, so do I.
About half the school would like to, take him down a few pegs. But kidnapping would mean you'd have to put up with him.
Tonks frowned slightly.
So you think there's a chance that he isn't alive?
Harry jerked. What? No! No!
Though Kurama killed the other demon so easily.
I don't think so. No.
Why wait a week? Why wait until there were masses of witnesses? And if he did, why didn't he do anything to me?
Malfoy's...
Unless Yusuke's here to make sure something does happen if I start to talk. But that still makes no sense. He's staying with the Order. He came right up and told me why he was here.
Malfoy's family is on the wrong side for him to be dead, if that makes any sense.
Shacklebolt stirred.
That's a very serious allegation, Mr. Potter, he said.
Harry glared at him, getting a wink for his trouble.
It'll have to stay off the record, Shacklebolt added. But rest assured, we're taking that into account.
Harry blinked. Wouldn't do them a bloody bit of good, but if the Prophet got a whiff that the Aurors thought Malfoy might be dead...
Ouch.
Is that all you've got then, Harry? Asked Tonks.
Harry jerked back to reality and nodded.
Right then, if we need anything more from you, one of us will be by, she said, indicating herself and Kingsley.
Vernon and Petunia nearly fell over each other trying to yank the door open for the pair to leave. With a final, bemused glance at them, a grin from Tonks for Harry, the wizards apparated out of the foyer with a loud pop.
Shiori had a long shift on Friday, with both early and late meetings inexplicably scheduled on the same day, and a morning's shift on Saturday. She'd be staying the night near work. The instant she'd finally left, before dawn, and with the motherly apologies that Kurama still couldn't quite understand, Kurama headed for the phone and punched in a string of numbers, a code that would erase itself from any phone bill in the world. As he waited to be patched through, the handset warmed slightly in his hand. The connection's overtones cycled from electronically fuzzy through dry crackling through a subliminal gurgle, finally settling on a whispery rush as the call got through and was picked up.
Hello, Botan? It's Kurama. I need a lift.